So what is the needle's secret? Watch and find out.
Hey guys, fascinating discussion today with Marc Girardot. I think I got that right. And he's a member of pandata.org. And he has come out with a new book that's getting rave reviews, even though it's not that long out, I believe. I have not read it yet, even though I have a copy. So perfectly, Marc is going to introduce it and go through the key concepts. And it's quite stunning, the implications of what he is discussing in his book. So stay tuned. But Marc, great to meet you in person.
Thank you for hosting me. Great to meet you too.
Yeah, not at all. We've connected quite a bit over the last few years of insanity. But you know, today we're going to get straight into it. And you have the book there, I believe. Aha. Oh, and you've got plenty of notes. And off screen, you were just telling me you've spent 2 years trying to falsify your own theories in this book, which is the right way to do it. Always try and disprove your hypothesis. And if you cannot, you've avoided confirmation bias and you've done it the right way. But, you know, we might start with a brief introduction of yourself and a bit of background, very brief.
Okay, I'm a Franco-American, father of four. I've traveled the world my entire life. I'm not a biologist. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an engineer. I'm a business guy. I'm an economist. I have an MBA from a top leading business school called INSEAD. I have a career in industrial gases, in management consulting, and I worked for Cisco for about 15 years, where I basically led the advisory consulting group in charge of automotive globally. So I'm a guy that's capable of working on numerous different topics. I had worked right before COVID for a competitor of Moderna and BioNTech on anti-cancer DNA vaccine. So I was basically prepped for this crisis. And I've been working for 4 years, almost nonstop. At one point, you know, I was trying to make money on the side, but I've worked about 10,000 hours on this. And my book is a synthesis of it all. And I've called it The Needle Secret because fundamentally, it's all related to not the poison that you're being injected with, which is a fact. I mean, every vaccine is a poison because it gets your immune system to attack it. So by the essence, it is. But more the delivery and the fact that 100% of the injections are going IV directly at the moment of injection. And that's depending on Russian roulette, basically luck. Depends on the dose you get and where it goes.
And that's something people may be familiar with, this whole controversy about the nature of how things were injected back in 21 during the madness, whether you hit arteries or veins or not, etc. But you know what I used to do, Marc, just for fun? I was a big fan of that Austrian kind of, God, what was he? A pathologist. You remember the guy who filled the bodies and all their vessels with wax and then he displayed them in big kind of modern art displays. I saw one in Spain. And he is one man, a real person, but he's filled all the arterioles and all the tiny vessels, all the vessels with the wax, and then he's removed everything else. So you've got a man who's basically just vessels. But the hands, the arms are fully there because vessels are everywhere. So I said, how can you claim that a needle can miss this? I mean, it might not get a major one, but it's going to hit a load of little ones at least.
Actually, it's even more simple than that, Ivor, for an engineer. This is a fluid. So fluid dynamics means that the injection will go wherever there's a lower pressure. If you've cut the vessel, any vessel, within 0.8 centimeters for the Pfizer, for Moderna is a bit more, it's going to go inside. It's going to go there. It's just physics. It's basic physics. The further away, the smaller the vessel, the lighter the dose, and evidently. But that's something. It was very funny because at the very start, I was telling doctors, say, guys, this got to be hitting, veins or arteries. And they're all telling me, no, Mark, it's very rare, one in 20,000. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense to me. But then it took me some time to think about basically distance insertion, basically inserting the vaccine remotely from a distance from the tip without being inserted. Because the doctors evidently, and everybody else, is thinking of their arms and how complicated it is to insert 100% of the dose. But the problem is, you don't need 100% of the dose here to harm. They're injecting you 10 to 40 billion nanoparticles. Now, a coin size hole into your aorta is about 60,000. That's 0.0006%. And if you want, if a stroke or a ruptured aneurysm in the brain is going to be a few hundred. It's tiny. So this idea of accidental IV injection is critical. And there's two aspects to my theory. And it's actually pretty funny because a lot of my colleagues have been telling me, Mark, your theory can't be the only theory. There's got to be something else. You're maniacal. I'm supposed to be crazy. And I've been saying all along, I'm not so sure why, but first of all your theories I've disproved, mine I haven't. But it took me a little while. And what's interesting is when science meets philosophy, and that's what's happened. The reality of it is the only way for us to bypass evolution's protections, and there's numerous layers of protections that have been built over the years, from albumin circulating to evidently dissemination of the vascular system to, of course, the immune system, et cetera. It's extremely hard to harm us. And when I ended up, I'm not so sure you have that, but in the book, I have a map of all the different no, that's not the one. I'll find it somewhere. Yeah, of course it's the last one. I have a map here, as you can see, with all the mechanisms of harm. And there's 12 of them. 12 of them, and they spread out in two different areas. The harm happens when you scale. I mean, a lot of people are going crazy on immaterial hypotheses, right? Who cares if one cell is going to create a toxic protein? It's produced by one cell. It's irrelevant. So harm is a question of scale, and there's different ways you can harm with scale. The first way you can harm is by having this bolus, this swarm of concentrated particles inserted and transported into your vascular system. That's the way doctors do it every day in hospitals when they want to deliver in co high concentration a drug. So you know that if you are doing that, you're going to deliver somewhere a high concentration of nanoparticles. Now, that's, I didn't introduce myself at first, but I was also on Steve Kirsch's scientific team with Biram Brittle 3 years ago. And when I've learned that the particles were going into the blood, I said, that's crazy, because fundamentally, these platforms are made not for to create antibodies. They were made to have T cells attack tumors.
They
And
are originally, yeah.
yes, that's what they are. That's what they are. And so I said, hold on a second. You're going to have these particles circulating into your bloodstream in huge numbers. I mean, for Moderna, it's 40 billion. And they're gonna penetrate those cells. These cells are gonna be signaled to your immune system as being contaminated, and your immune system's gonna attack it.
Yeah.
And 40 billion of them. Okay, 40 billion is enough to break it, skin you alive multiple times. Okay, not a problem. So that's when I started getting really concerned, And so I understood that the bolus actually what it does when it does transfect in a concentrated way, the inside of your blood vessels, the immune system comes in, strips it off, and we've never evolved for any of this. Never. So what happens is you have a series of different imbalances. Sometimes it's going to be over demand for coagulation, you're going to have thrombosis. Sometimes it's going to push too much growth factors and you're going to have angiomas and fistulas. And fundamentally, we've never evolved for such an imbalance. Okay. So you have this part of the theory, which is which explains everything that's got to do with the cardiovascular part of it. Then there's another part which is also triggered by the same problem, but more in the systems and in the organs, whereby either it's going to hit the capillaries, it's gonna create clots in the capillaries, and it's gonna necrose the function the organs behind. So type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes is exactly that. What happened if you've actually destroyed part of the pancreas through such a process. So the necrosis, I have friend who's lost, I have two friends who've lost parts of their lungs. But you can basically articulate that to any part of the body. You can get blind, you can get deaf, I have another friend who lost his gallbladder entirely. It's completely gone. So that's the necrosis part. But there's another big discovery of my work is the fact that the bolus is dissolves over time very quickly. When I'm talking about this bolus, it's a 1 minute instant. It's just 1 minute. During that first minute that you get damaged, after that it's disseminated and your body's managing. The body cannot manage it during that first minute. And what you can be certain of is dilution, right? So the bolus, when it gets really diluted, it can also do a sort of cluster bonding, little bits and pieces, little holes. It transforms the inside of your capillaries or mostly the capillaries in a sieve-like membrane. So, and that's a real problem because the endothelium, which is the inside that we're talking about, the inside of those vessels you're talking about, plays a fundamental role, two fundamental roles in the body. One is to protect the organs and the systems, protect, for example, nerve cells from anything that's going to disrupt it, or protect the brain, for example, or protect your sperm against T cells attacks, etc. Or it also plays a role of hormone regulation, and so or anything re regulating anything, enzymes and stuff. So if you actually break those barriers, you're basically freeing our hormones all the time. That explains. I'm for the first time I'm explaining basically endocrine disorder in not a pseudo genetic way, but in a physical way. And what's interesting is if you go online and in the book, I have a whole list of articles that show that post-vaccine COVID vaccines, but also other vaccines, you have this perforation or this capillary leakage. Some capillary leakage or vascular leakage. It's a very known element. It's a very known illnesses. Depending on where you have this phenomenon, well, you're going to have different types of illnesses. So if it's an endocrine gland, you're going to have endocrine disorder. Either if it's you're going to have hypersecretion. If it's in the brain, and you've actually perforated the blood-brain barrier, you're going to have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, MS, etc. If it's in the oversights or in the testis, you're going to have a sperm count is going to go down, or you're going to have problems like that, or you're going to have endometriosis for women. So that's this whole part of my theory is extremely solid. I mean, first of all, every single step is based on, scientific laws. If this happens, this has to happen, right? And not only that, but it's been reproduced on animals, right? It's been reproduced in Hong Kong early on. I think you're right, in September or August, September 1 by Lee et al. It was also in Munich by Nicolai et al., where they basically injected.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was the thing, actually, Mark. That, there were loads of publications, and I didn't get too heavily involved because I could just see the scale of the bun fight during 21, and I was kind of focusing more on who was driving all this madness, the geopolitics. I just made a choice, but there were loads of publications sent my way, like where this substance ended up in the ovaries and the testes, and there were loads of publications. And then there were other publications saying that even 8 to 9 months later, there was a persistence of local inflammatory issues and the spike protein, and all of this science was going out there. But of course, mainstream science would just ignore it all. But I think, as you say, everything you're talking about is essentially published on, only no one really wants to look at it.
I think our team, whatever you want to call us, freedom fighters or whatever, hasn't done the homework. I'm one of the rare ones who did. So the spike protein thing is a possibility, and I'm going to explain to you why soon. But the reality of it is, it's going to be extremely, extremely rare. This circulating spike protein cannot happen. You have antibodies, they do the work, right? And it's been demonstrated since May 2021. There's a study by Ogata and all that shows that day nine, most of the spike protein is gone. And that's normal, right? That's normal. Actually, after the second shot, hardly any spike is produced because T cells intervene very, very quickly.
They do
Okay?
a good job.
They do a good job. They do their job. If they don't do their job, then you need to explain why they're not doing their job. I haven't seen that. It can happen, but it's got to be rare. Now, the second part of my theory is a bit different. It's harder to prove. It's extremely solid, I believe. When you do a theory and you can't prove everything, you just need to make sure that it's actually consistent. And it is consistent from a logic standpoint, and also from a mechanism standpoint. What is it? One of the things I didn't understand is how can you have cancer cells if the cells that are penetrated by these vaccines are destroyed by the immune system? How is that even possible? You have to admit, so a cell is penetrated, starts producing this spike protein. It has what is called MHCs that present these little contaminants, and your immune system detects it and destroys it. So every single cell that carries this MHC is going and is contaminated is going to get destroyed. That's how, virus gets get destroyed in our bodies too. So for about 2 years, I was like, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Who's going? And a lot of my friends were talking about mutations and all that. And I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand what's the process. But I had worked on, at one point, I had worked on cancer vaccine efficacy. And I had looked into the bone marrow. And in the bone marrow, the immune system is suppressed. And often, and that's the reason by that is of that is because immune cells are immune privileged. So stem cells. Did I say immune cells?
Damn cells, yeah,
Stem
not immune.
cells. Stem cells are immune privileged. That's extremely important. Stem cells do three things. They produce red cells, red blood cells every day. They produce white blood cells, which are immune cells, and they produce regenerative cells that come and repair your body.
And actually, just as an aside, I remember going through quite a bit of this science years before COVID, because endothelial regenerative cells, when you have a clot or a problem, floods of these endothelial progenitor cells will flood to the damaged area in the artery. And then they've tried to bring in various kind of versions of them as a drug to help with arterial repair. But all of this is absolutely mainstream. So just an aside.
You know, nothing I'm telling you is I mean, I'm an MD, so it's not, I mean, I've read a lot, but so what's interesting is at one point I said, okay, so what happens if a stem cell gets transfected? And fundamentally, if you believe in evolution, which I do, you have to tell you something is that if a stem cells, if a normal cell, okay, cannot find a solution to a contaminant and has to commit suicide, there's a fair chance that stem cells don't have a solution either. Because if they had a solution, they would have transmitted it by evolution to normal cells. So it means that stem cells are not protected when they get contaminated. And it also explains, and that's why I like the, you know, logic, the consistency. It also explains why stem cells don't have the same fuel system. They're not they use glycolysis. They don't use oxygen. They actually get oxygen from glucose from sugar. What does it mean? It means that stem cells have evolved to be hidden away from the bloodstream, and not only from the oxygen, but also from the bloodstream and not only from viruses and bacteria and toxins that could circulate and poison them, but also oxygen. Evidently, vaccines that are injected properly are going to behave like viruses, and it's going to be extremely rare, and the probability is maybe 1 in 1 million or something, that you're going to be able a virus or a vaccine particle is going to be able to reach the stem cells in the bone marrow. The bone marrow is protected by the blood bone marrow barrier, so they can't get in normally. And in the ones you're talking about, the progenitor cells that are in the endothelium are hidden niches behind. It's extremely improbable that a vaccine would actually get in. Now, however, once you inject a bolus, that's a completely different story, right? Because a bolus would actually penetrate, would actually also, if there's holes in the barrier, they would enter and go further down and increase the likelihood, okay? Increase the likelihood of a transfection. And now that's the big moment. I mean, that's one of the big moments. I think microperforation is a big moment too, but one of the big revelation of my book is, you know, stem cells, if they can't protect themselves, probably have only one option, which is to replicate, right?
Just, you know, automatic cell death or replication if they must survive, for sure.
Yeah, well, cell death is they don't do apoptosis because P53 is inhibited. The famous P53 inhibition comes from stem cells. So they can't commit suicide. They're too precious. So what they most likely do, that's my conjecture, but it's based, there's at least one example with ROS, which is reactive oxygen species, whereby that's exactly what happens. Too much oxygen enters, stem cell multiply. This is very important because it changes completely the dynamics, and you have these stem cells that are starting to replicate. Now, the whole cancer theory has always been, oh, you know, you take too much sun and 30 years later or 20 years later, you get a cancer. It makes no sense, okay? Now, you'll see how fluid and logical my theory is. Now, if the cell is going to replicate, the nucleus is gone, right? Because the chromosomes duplicate in chromatids, and then they need to spread. They need to split. During that time, well, they're accessible. They're accessible to anything that shouldn't be there, right? So if you start having proteins, toxins, mRNA, DNA, like, you know, Kevin McKernan's findings,
yeah.
Well, necessarily, you know, at one point, There's going to be some binding, some, those are magnets. There is chemical magnets. I mean, that's your background more than mine, but the binding is going to happen. So what happens when you have two chromatids that are trying to split and you've got material, genetic material or chemical material that's in between? Well, either you're going to miscalibrate the splitting and you're going to have two chromosomes staying on one side and zero on the other. You're going to have trisomy on one end, monosomy on the other, or you're going to have breakups, or you're going to have exchanges, or you're going to have integration. So fundamentally, and it's not even, you don't need to have SV40, you don't need to have all these crazy supposed genetic pathways. It's there. It's just, it's just your it's just as certain as if you start playing football in a data center and hitting servers that you're going to break down the data center. It's exactly the same thing. So what's really interesting is then you go and check and say, well, can vaccines start cancers that way, right? Is my theory, one group of my one element of my theory is basically evasion by replication. Okay. So then I went to check and I said, well, okay, well, is our cancer cells stem cells? Because that's what my observation shows is that cancer cells have to be stem cells because it can't be the other ones that have been destroyed. So I started looking into that, and I had worked a lot on cancer, on immuno-oncology, so I knew a lot, but I for some reason I had trusted, I was new to this field 5 years ago. So I trusted these guys when they told me that you had a mutation. It seemed odd that you would have millions of mutations that always end up with all of these features. But then I started looking into cancerogenesis. In the past 20 years, there's a lot of researchers that have been saying, hey, it's strange. These cancer cells just behave like stem cells or progenitor cells. I mean, sometimes they're a bit more, but they behave. They have all the features. So they have P53 inhibition, they have hTERT, in some cases, they don't have MHCs. In some cases, they have MHCs, but they're immune suppressed with HLA-G, with PD-1. They have mid-bodies, they're self-renewing, they're eternal. And you add the list and you're like, whoa, that can't be a coincidence. And there is no way, as you're saying earlier, I mean, you're suggesting earlier, there's no way you have these mutations back. I mean, it's impossible mathematically. So it's like, yeah, wow. Okay, so I understand that. I'm not saying that all cancers are generated that way. I mean, you can probably, but all cancers are generated through stem cells. That's quite obvious from what I understand now. And that's a big change from cancer theory on its own, right? So that's a big finding already. I mean, of course, you can have other ways to contaminate stem cells with toxins, with other vaccines, potentially with radiation and stuff, but
And there's other corroboration there. I mean, there's some great papers when I looked into this years ago, basically going back to when we're kind of fetuses and stem cells are allowed to kind of run riot because they got to build a human, right? It's a very special time. But many papers talking about how cancer is basically just going back to that kind of primitive machinery and applying it in a chaotic fashion. But that's it, largely.
I have an analogy that I use for people to understand. The infrastructure of stem cells is extremely organized and numbered. It's not, you can't have that haphazard. It's extremely structured. You have, as you were saying, omnipotent stem cells, and then they specialize and they go down into progenitor cells that are extremely specialized. Now, imagine that you get this contamination and you have to, I don't know, whatever, multiply in 1,000 times. Okay, so say multiply not to 1,000 cells. It means that after that, every time you have a signal for a demand for stem cells, instead of having one answer, you've got 1,000 of them, right? To make a good analogy is if you have 10 cooks in the kitchen, you're ordering your burger, you're getting 10 burgers. That's the very definition of cancer, right? That's the very definition of cancer. So, and the interesting thing, everybody's been very surprised at the explosion of tumor cancers recently. And saying, "Oh, this is all new." Well, no, it's not new. The only thing is, and that's again where cancer, my cancer theory is extremely robust and consistent from a logical standpoint, is that you have a hierarchy, right, with different scaling levels. Okay, so if you transfect, if you contaminate a high-ranking stem cell, it has enormous scale. So you're going to have a turbo cancer because every time there's a demand for it, it's going to swarm the body with these new cells. If you hit a low-grade progenitor cells you were mentioning, which doesn't have scaling because it's already specialized considerably, you might have you might have a cancer, or you might have an indolent cancer, very slow cancer. Chronic lymphocytic leukemia, for example, or you might have just a neoplasm, i.e., it's going to start growing, and then it's going to stop because it doesn't have hTERT, and it ran out of telomeres length. So it's, you see, it's extremely consistent both in terms of the features, in terms of the behavior, and the logic. Now, the other aspect of the genetic side of my theory, so you have cancer, high grade and low grade cancer, but then you have, of course, genetic disorders, right? So this is something nobody had thought. I mean, I had never thought of. I didn't think vaccines would actually trigger genetic disorders. I also always believed about supposed genetics. Now I understand that genetics is when people don't know and they're trying to blame somebody else for their own malpractice. But fundamentally, you have three different ways of harming your genes or modifying them, right? And you can fit in all the genetic disorders that exist. Now, I want to tell you about an anecdote that happened to me when I started writing my book about less than a year ago. I was really tired of structuring it all. As you know, it's very draining. And one afternoon I said, "Oh, why don't I try testing my theory on autism?" I didn't know anything about autism, even though I'm fascinated by the brain, but always thought, autism is way too complicated. Talking about systems of systems of systems, you're like too many bouncing balls. So I said, "Okay, well, if those moms are right, if those moms are right that their kid was normal and then took a vaccine and became autistic, and my theory is right, then I can say stuff about autism, and it has to be right." And one of the hallmarks of my theory is that the bolus is chaotic in behavior, but you know for sure that it's going to go places, right? So if you've been hit somewhere, and it was a bolus, there's a high likelihood that it's also hit somewhere else. On that basis, I said, "Okay, well, if I'm right, then they should have more. They should be more Parkinsonian. They should have more Alzheimer's. They should have had strokes at that moment. They should have hearing impairments. They should be blind more often. They should have congenital heart disease. They should have genetic disorders. They should have more cancer. They should have leaky gut. They should be obese." I listed basically 40 hypotheses, all the endocrine disorders, both hypersecretion, hyposecretion. I just listed 40 and I said, let's see what it does. And I spent the afternoon looking for odds ratio. They all came back positive, 40. Okay, so just for your viewers, that's 1.1 trillion choices. So getting it right on 1.1 trillion choices never happened to me.
Yeah, it's not an everyday occurrence, unless you're Bill Gates or someone. Stuff like that probably happens for him.
Okay, yeah. So that when I, I know you're a math guy. When I realized that, I was like, "Okay, I know this is extremely solid, extremely solid." So that basically, this is my theory. And now, One observation I have made is that, contrary to what we've been told, this is not specific to mRNA vaccines. And that's why I've been fighting alone for a very long time, because a lot of people have been saying we need to stop this because this technology is new. And I've been saying, no, this has been happening for 100 years. We have been doing this for 100 years with, I mean, there's little nuances, because, for example, protein vaccines like the flu vaccines is much less dangerous because it doesn't trigger that immune a T cell reaction against cells, because it doesn't penetrate cells. So it can harm if it's a bolus and it and does some kind of saturation at one instance. Just like, I don't know if you heard of something called Trenkoff. You heard about that? Trenkoff is steroids. When bodybuilders inject themselves steroids, occasionally they hit a vessel, and they're basically, when the steroids get to their lungs, they collapse, and so they basically can't breathe for 2 or 3 minutes. So it's it, and you can die of it. It's called pulmonary oil-mediated embolism. So going back to what I was saying earlier, I've been, confirming, my theory is not limited to mRNA vaccines. It also applies to other vaccines, like attenuated virus vaccines, or virus-like vaccines, or pseudovirus vaccines. But it also applies to other drugs, to vitamins, to anesthetics. I have a reader who said, "Mark, can it work for an anesthesia? I had one with a dentist, and now I have tinnitus." I said, "Supposedly, yeah, by saturation." And also even venom. If you get stung by a bee, if it's in the tissue, you're going to be fine. You can get 10 of them, you're fine. If you get one in a vessel, you're dead. If you're not near a pharmacy or in a hospital that's going to inject you some stuff.
That's where snakes, I guess, are. Well, there's different kind of virulence of the venom, but also the fact that they get the teeth in, they're going for gold. They're going for
Yeah,
gold.
and they also inject. It's an interesting that you mentioned snake. I wrote an article about 18 months ago where I did a comparison between the vaccine doses and venom, bee venom, spider venom, and black mamba venom. Black mamba venom, they inject you with a ton of toxin, so you'd have you'd probably die because of the ton. It's overwhelming. But that's one thing that people, on our side, the freedom fighter side, haven't been so happy about, because I've said, look, if you look at the dose that Pfizer has used, is actually fairly low. And Moderna is on the high side, but still lower in terms of weight. At least, I use the weight because it's hard to understand, the toxicity. But are we saying that these vaccines are more toxic than a bee venom? I'm not so sure, right? And so what's really important about my theory is it all started for me with the observation that you can get harmed or not, right? And it's important because some people are getting frightened now and think they're going to die, and everybody's telling, Gerd von den Bosch, for example, is saying that everybody's going to die, et cetera, which is complete bullshit. We need to stop. We should not be scaring people. We should not be scaring people.
That's very important. And I interviewed Professor Wolfgang Wodarg in Sweden last September, and I was delighted when he said that, and I picked him up on it. He was just talking about the harms, very much in line with what you're talking about, without the full theory, but just broadly, you're going to get intermittent harms, you're going to get, and he can list them out. Now, another question is the benefits, which I put at effectively zero, but we can talk about that in a moment. But he also said, pretty much, if you've had it and a few months pass and nothing happens or nothing notable, largely you've walked it off. Now, of course, there could be an autoimmune or there could be subclinical damage that you're not aware of. But given that you truly didn't have a problem, 6 or 8 months later, you're kind of past it. And I said that's very important for people to hear, because we have a lot of scaremongers. I mean, we had people coming out in 21, and I looked and I said, "Oh no, You are giving a hostage to fortune there. You are going to embarrass yourself. People talking about mass death a year or two down the road. I said, that's testable. And I know it's going to fail. I mean, all my virology guys, you know, mostly on our side, but still, you know, really knowledgeable guys. They said, look, it's not going to have long-term harm, but it's going to cause a ton of morbidity in the population at a certain percentage level and some mortality, which we don't seem to have seen a huge amount of really. And but the benefit, because I know we have to bring this to a close before the hour, but what kills me is the benefit is a farce as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
All of the data that...
Yeah, okay, so that's another element that's really interesting. I haven't, I've been trying to be not too too aggressive on that side. Even though in my conclusion, I do say I believe there's a Ponzi scheme. Let me explain why.
Yeah.
My whole theory is based on the fact that the vascular system protects us by providing a bulletproof vest dissemination effect, right? Namely, what it does is it spreads the poison across the body here, 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 and there, and the microenvironment in each area can deal with it, right? So you don't have that scaling mechanism I was telling you about.
But the mRNA, though, particularly even when it is dispersed with the body trying to spread it around and kind of mitigate it, it can set up locally or concentrate, I would guess, and then cause a bit of scaling.
No, I mean, you're going to have, first of all, transfection doesn't work very well. That's why they inject you with a ton, okay? It doesn't work. You know, the company I used to work for, they would electrocute people, cancer patients, to actually get the transfection to work, okay? That's the reason they inject you with 10 billion and 40 billion. It's because probably one in 1,000 gets transfected.
So they're flinging mud at a wall.
Effectively. Exactly. Exactly. So it's not, I mean, but the reason why those vaccines, I wanted to talk about the Ponzi scheme. So there is one element that doesn't make sense, is this whole idea that you have these viruses that go and hit those special places. Let me explain why. Mm. Because if, for example, the SARS-CoV-2, in that respect, would be extremely dangerous because it can penetrate almost everywhere in the body, right?
Yeah.
So it means that it can escape the immune system's detection very early on, scale and grow very quickly. If you have, let's say, supposedly polio, how is it that the polio virus is going to circulate and hit one door, the door is shut, here another door. It's going to hit a ton of doors that are shut, because if it can only integrate into the spinal cord, the chances are really slim. You know, that's 35 grams out of 66 kilos of meat. You know, so it's like, it would, you know, the probabilities of getting detected early by the immune system, which typically takes 3 or 4 hours, would be immediate. So here's my Ponzi scheme theory, even though that would need to be validated, is I think what we've been doing is the vaccines and those injections, it's been 150 years that doctors have been injecting stuff to people. And of course, in their list of, you know, when you do hypotheses and you're observing stuff, you need to have a list of hypotheses that is comprehensive. If you have a list that's missing out, my colleague injected me with a vaccine, maybe there's a malpractice there. Oh no, I'm not going to put it in there. You're basically being blind to a lot of problems. And therefore, the more you would actually inject, the more you would have adverse events. The more these adverse events would be justified by a virus, a bacteria, or genetics. Never doctors. Okay? Never doctors. So you look at this and you're like, okay, that's that. So you're basically, I'm questioning just about most of these illnesses. I mean, hepatitis, polio, all of that. I'm not saying they can't exist. I mean, of course they can exist if your immune system is low. You can have, you know, But if you're in a modern society like ours and you're eating, decent nutrition, and everybody is,
High
almost
vitamin
everybody,
D,
yeah, you'll be able to fight it off. Hence the fact that all these illnesses were going down way before vaccines came along.
that's a key point in itself. I mean, the classic eight graphs of these communicable diseases from the turn of the century and the mortality, and measles is one of them, it claps down almost to the x-axis in mortality, which is the thing that matters. Almost touched the x-axis, it was that low, like one or two in 100,000 levels. And then they brought in the magical vaccine and then claimed this enormous benefit. But it's impossible. It already, and there's two or three diseases there they never got a vaccine for. I think scarlet fever is one, and one or two more in the group of eight. And they all fell the exact same with the others and continued on down to near zero, even though they never made a vaccine for those ones. But they behaved the exact same. Clearly, it was not the vaccine.
Yeah, I actually, one of the things I know about a bit, one of my first articles was around the scam for the elderly, because the elderly were supposed to be the target, right, originally
Supposedly.
for these vaccines, but then they included everybody else, and then when it didn't work for the elderly, they said, oh, it can't be effective 100%. And you're like, what? That's a trick.
Yeah.
But I have worked a lot on that, and at Panda, I was one of the first ones to say those vaccines can't work, and I was getting beaten up all the time by a lot of my colleagues there, except Nick Hudson, who's always been very, very cordial and trusting in me.
Smart guy.
But I'm very smart. But I was saying, this is a mucosal virus you're injecting in the muscle. Right. And by the way, there is no immune cells in the muscle, right? Because there's no reason, if you've never evolved for harming your inside your muscle. So I was like, this can't work. And I had done work with the first year of COVID. I worked with a lot of folks, including Michael Leavitt, with whom I had long discussions on immunity and also cross immunity and population density, and we had worked some things out. And one of the things I had realized is you need a mucosal immunity to be asymptomatic. But people who were immune 4 years ago, and there are tons of them, already were immune, but they had a different kind of immunity,
Yeah,
which is often
stupid.
transient, which is mucosal, which is here. It's stopping at the doors. No, you're not
Yes.
entering. Right. You don't get that kind of immunity by injecting in the muscle. I mean, it's common sense. You don't need it.
Yeah,
I don't need
of
a
course.
PhD to tell you that.
But you'd be knocked off YouTube for discussing it a couple of years ago. And that's the thing. The whole thing is so corrupt, it's almost comical. The corruption now, the audacity of the corruption, and the ignoring of science. And basically, just a pseudoscience, kind of a weird new pharma complex religion, is what's pumped out all day long. And I think, though, just to close on a point, but people need to get the book and go through all the detail, because I know it's very hard to summarize. As you said, you could spend hours here. And all the people who are interested in this topic, this is a fantastic book that brings together everything in a proper hypothesis and fully referenced, and all from established science, because a lot of these vaccine books, they go overboard, and they begin to talk about stuff that's quite honest as fear mongering. I think Turtles All the Way Down, that book was very good because it was dispassionate, and it just made the point that there's no real placebo control in the history of these types of drugs. Therefore, technically, it's not science. Without placebo, there is no real science. So that's a good one too. But get these book, guys. But I was going to close on something else. I think I mentioned it there about, oh, people waking up. I mean, the take-up rate, even in the medical profession, for boosters this winter was shamefully low by their standards. And the medical profession in Ireland were some of the worst people on this planet for falling for the nonsense. Whether the medications or the original saving granny stuff. But there's a very poor take-up. So even within the medical profession, that's 90% kind of zombies who go with everything in the narrative, there was only a 20-odd percent take-up of the flu COVID shot this winter. And it was kept kind of quiet because it was a visible embarrassment. What do you think in terms of the system trying to push again something as enormously corrupt as what was done in 21? Do you think it'll wash?
Yeah, frankly, I think there is corruption, but I think there's a lot of dystopia. You know, I was having a fight with one of my good friend who's one of the best researchers who's invented this vaccine. He believes the HPV vaccine works, and I was telling him it was very dangerous. So the problem is there's a lot of fake science or bad science, whatever you want, or biased science, and it requires guys like us to read through the bullshit. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, I know I've read tens of thousands of science papers in the past 5 years, and the number, it takes me like, you know, 10 seconds to read through it. So like, well, this is biased, this is not working, etc. So I think there's a collective dystopia. I think the community,
yeah.
I think people are waking up. I wrote an article recently whereby I was saying, you know, if your degree one and two has been harmed considerably, and everybody has some, I have like a list without asking too much around me. I have at least 26 people who have been harmed around me, and 5 people who have died. Okay, strange.
That's strange. A lot. I would say maybe one or two people possibly related to it, and in terms of harmed, I know 5 or 6 probably. Almost certainly. But yeah, they're pretty big numbers. But you've been engaged in this topic a lot more than me and looking a lot closer.
Yeah, I've been. I think 100% of the shots go IV. There's a study in Japan by Nakaha and all, and there's another one by Professor Mueller in Basel Hospital, University Hospital, that shows that 100% of the hearts have been lightly damaged, which shows that the IV, that can only happen with an IV.
Of course, yeah, it's essentially proven in its fundamentals, no question.
Yeah, I think about 5% are going to be serious with serious, you know, lifelong consequences or death, and 1%, which is a lot, huh? When you for every single shot, huh? And so in my calculation, about 670 million people have been harmed in the world, okay, and about 130 million clinically, and when you cross check with, for example, the people, you know, the work that Denis Rancourt, you know, they did a work and they found about 17 million up to last summer of people died, of which about 3/4 were elderly. Okay, and when you do this calculation, you correct for the age bias, you end up with about 30 million people worldwide that have been harmed clinically. It's a ballpark figure. I mean, I could be wrong, plus or minus 20%, but it's fundamentally in that ballpark figure. It's enormous. But what's even more enormous is that we've been doing that for 50 years. And we've been doing that to our kids. So in the book, my part 4 is on all linking arteriosclerosis to the vaccine, linking endocrine disorder to the vaccine, ill injections, okay? I have cancer, I have autism, I have, obesity also. Everything is tied to this damage. And what's really interesting is every time you check, they always have this bolus where it's hit, so they have odds ratio higher up, which sort of is always a confirmation that that's the way it's occurred. I mean, I'm sure there are other ways you can get cancer. Arteriosclerosis, it's hard to damage your endothelium, and you need to go be drowned or take CO2 poisoning. Okay, I'm not too sure half of the U.S. population has had CO2 poisoning.
The super high sugar, blood sugar, diabetics does Does pack a punch, but yes, absolutely. So is your bookmark, is that available now on pretty much all the usual platforms, or is it kind of limited?
Now it's limited on Amazon for now. I had, I wasted a lot of time actually with publishers. And frankly, Amazon is very equitable with for authors. It's very effective, and I'm in really I've committed financial seppuku. I've been working almost full time on this, so I'm completely broke. So now I need to I figure out either start working and stop this nonsense, but it's been very hard to stop this given what I have discovered. It's just too important. There's too many things that are, and it's extremely. Now I was telling you that I had worked with Michael Leavitt, who's a Nobel Prize in chemistry, and he was a friend. I presented him with my work about 5 months ago. And it was interesting the way he reacted. He was, first of all, he didn't say anything negative about my science, which was already, quite something telling. But at the end, he said, it's quite simple, and it is. It is simple. We're just bypassing nature's
Which
potential.
often speaks to being correct, to be quite honest, and the complicated science speak and techno babble is used to bamboozle us all, as I think Carl Sagan said once. Well, listen, hopefully we get more people to get the book, and by all means, guys, as well, spread the word about the book and Mark's work. I guess you have to get back to other work now to keep the show on the road, as you say, because books don't make any money, really. But listen, it's a labor of love, I suppose, like most of what I do as well.
Thank you so much for hosting me. It was great talking to you.
That'll do it, folks. Link to Marc Girardeau's book is down below, should you want to delve deeper into the needle's secret. And as always, thanks so much to my Patreon and PayPal supporters. I've been over in the UK last week giving a speaking tour, getting out to the people, and also in Dublin at a big cardiovascular event, and always working to get the actual facts out there and combat the misinformation from the legacy media. So that work needs support. So thanks so much, guys, and anyone else who can go to my Patreon or PayPal links down below and help out a little in the mission. Thank you.